We start now really to get to the matches more with the storylines here. There was a little bit of one to this one. Honky Tonk Man with Jimmy Hart defeated Jake the Snake Roberts with Alice Cooper. This came when Honky Tonk Man hit him with the guitar.
A very famous. It's so fun. I'm glad we're going a little out of order, by the way, as far as the matches.
Right.
But I'm glad you referenced that because, to me, this show had very memorable. It just shows then and now, which mm-hmm. I keep bringing up that dichotomy. That was all they did. They just did the one thing, and just that one angle was enough to build intrigue, unlike now where they do it. And then there'd be weeks, and they'd do more stuff. And by the time you get to the match, you don't even care anymore. You're sick of
right.
seeing them, you know, do stuff. It was interesting. Honky was interesting. But these two guys, once again, Jake Roberts, you talk about those cool heels we talked about before.
Right.
He was kind of, it was an organic fate. You know, people, I remember he wrestled Randy Savage, a rare heel match on a Saturday Night event. The crowd was very audibly chanting for Jake Roberts. They were chanting. The DDT was as over as any move in wrestling during this time period.
And the one match that he had, I think it was on a Saturday night's main event with Steamboat, didn't they have to, in post-production, edit out some of the DDT chants?
They always did. That was something that was something they always did. The DDT was just like, by the end of 86, it was very clear that they needed to turn him face. They just needed a way to do it. And it was very interesting that they used the guy that they brought in as a face. And what were they thinking?
Yeah.
That was not well-received. The Honky Tonk Man doing it just a... It's so funny because I liked him so much when he turned heel. Because what were they thinking? And a third-rate Elvis impersonator as a babyface? Remember he came in, he's like, oh, I'm friends with Hulk. I love Hulk Hogan. He's my guy.
But that's how out of touch Vince is with popular culture. Vince grew up on guys like that. You know, we're big. Vince grew up on doo-wop crap. That's part of the reason we had Deuce and Domino a few years back.
Yeah, I guess so. But it was funny because that was kind of like a double turn. And I wasn't, you know, Hurt Austin. But, I mean, it was that angle in the snake pit. You know, Roberts had his own talk show. And you know, he hit some of the guitar. And this was kind of considered pretty shocking that the Honky wins.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, I mean, I think,
and for Jake early on, they're lucky it didn't neuter him as a baby face.
Well, it was kind of weird. It's kind of funny because Jake.
It wasn't that.
After the Junkyard Dog, we talk about JYD for a short period of time. You could have made a case he was the number two. There was a period, and it hadn't happened yet, and that speaks to his talent because it happened after, you know, he loses a match that probably most people figure he's going to, you know, win pretty clean because no one took the Honky Tonk Man seriously at all.
Right.
Everyone's like, this guy sucks. Get rid of this guy. And. You know, even in the very kayfabe 87 period, those thoughts were there. But you could make a case like 88. Like, he was probably the number two babyface behind Hogan. Jake Roberts.
Ahead of Savage?
I should take that back. You're right. Other than the Mega
Pop. But still, though.
Even in 89 when Savage turned.
Still pretty impressive.
Him and Jim Duggan were always kind of that high. Remember? Because I'm just thinking because in that Survivor Series.
Yeah.
The second, they were kind of the co-captain. They you know, right. I guess the ultimate warrior too. But he was, this was considered, and it's a testament to him that it didn't hurt him, and it was a huge help for because, like I said, the prevailing theory, if there was an internet, everyone would be like, oh, they're going to just bury this Honky Tonk Man and go on with it. He wins. He goes on. You know, they did a great job booking him in 87 as like this terrible guy that no one thought deserved to ever win, and he always cheat. He cheats to win here. You know, they did the angle with Alice Cooper after, which is, I guess, okay. But, he wins the Intercontinental title, you know, a couple months down the road, the Honky Tonk Man, and has a very good run with it.
Well, and the thing that's hilarious, Alice Cooper, this guy who has the image to a good chunk of the world as being a big druggie who's anything but, teamed up with Jake Roberts. Fill in your own punchline
exactly,
here. Yeah. You know, with that.
By the way, I it needs to be said that unlike today, when the celebrities are just doing it for a paycheck and kind of are almost embarrassed to be there. These celebrities, I thought, like, genuinely put a good foot forward in these early WrestleManias.
I thought so, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying, like, Alice Cooper ever came out and cut, like, you know, one of the finest promos in the history of the business, but it seemed like he was, like, into it. You know, Euchre.
Right.
Bob Euchre was at this WrestleMania.
He was pretty funny.
Even Mary Hart, you know, I mean, seemed like she tried, you know, a little bit.
By the way, as far as it goes with Jake Roberts in 86, this is an urban legend I've never seen substantiated. Supposedly there's this lost snake pit that never made air They were going to set up a house show program with him and Hogan. He DDT'd him. The crowd was going nuts for the DDT, and it never aired.
Jake lies a lot.
Right.
And that was on. I love that Jake lied. I don't know what it is.
Right. And if somebody offered him 3 grams of crack to tell the story in a shoot interview, he would. So
yeah,
you
but
can't
here's
be
the,
sure.
It's not revered as one of the best DVDs they've done. Mm-hmm. And granted, there are some false truths. Mm-hmm. I love that Jake Roberts, that Pick Your Poison DVD.
I haven't seen it.
Really?
No.
Oh, God. I really like it.
Okay.
I mean, they gave it a lot of room to breathe. It's longer than a lot of the other ones of guys they've done subsequently from the year, like the Steamboats and the Headings. Oh, it's a good one. I'm going to let you buy
it. I know the answer is probably no. Did they talk to Bill Watts on that one?
No, he buried Bill Watts unmercifully on it.
Okay.
He buried him unmercifully.
Okay.
They talk about Bill Watts. He buries him horribly in it. For both when he worked for him in the 80s and the 90s.
Okay.
When he came to WCW. But
interesting.
They do reference that. That's where I think that came. He's like, oh, yeah, we did. Hogan, who, of course, is another notorious liar. It's tough when those are your two base sources of info on something.
Right.
He acknowledged that they did do something, but they don't show it.
Okay.
So I don't know if the crowd, Jake kind of played it up like, the crowd wanted him to beat Hogan and be like this huge baby face. I don't know. I mean, it could have been a smattering of people,
Could have been.
Who
okay.
knows?
Well, you said I'm going out of order on this, and I am, but I'm trying to build towards what are the most important ones on the card. The next one, probably an importance from there. 6-man tag after they did the tag team title switch earlier in the year. Dynamite Kid could barely walk at this point, much less wrestle.
He was okay. Because he did moves. Here he
with
was
two okay. fifths of vodka and a bot and a glass, and a bunch of Vicodin every night. Maybe
yeah,
he was all
right.
Right.
But I mean, he was not the worker he once was. This was not. He had certainly dropped the level from the matches with Tiger Mask in Japan. But I mean,
well, the man had herniated his disc December 13th.
Yeah, but I mean, what's interesting is
sad that I remember the date.
Oh, I thought you were maybe going off Wikipedia.
I am not actually. That's from my old After Mags. It just burned in my and it was Cops Ontario, Cops Coliseum.
Yeah, he hurt himself. Ontario? And it's funny because let's talk about the setup to this.
Yeah.
Danny. It's funny because he did nothing once they made him into a wrestler. Mm-hmm. They tried here. I thought that was a great angle. I mean, WCW ripped it off with Nick Patrick, which I thought also got over very well, if you remember. The dirty, don't you think, it's, again, very much like the full battle, two guys have the same finishing move. Easy psychology, easy to book. Is it like the heel ref? That's a good gimmick.
It is.
And, pardon me. If you go back to the syndication and mm-hmm. Superstars and Judge, they really built that up. This was not something that just this was done a lot better than, say, NWA when they did it with Teddy Long against the Road Warriors when he just kind of out of nowhere did a fast count, remember, to get the belts off them. They, for months, had him favoring the heels, Davis. And what was in an unbelievable, I don't know if it was luck or they never mentioned these things, were continuity. He was the ref, Davis. They had not started the gimmick at this point. He was the ref when Savage cheated to beat Santana for the Intercontinental title. And they played that up here. Even though when it happened, it just so happened he was a ref and a heel cheated to win a title. He played no role in it.
As somebody who used to watch Guiding Light when it was on the air and is familiar with soap opera and other structuring, have you ever heard of the term retroactive continuity, retcon?
Yeah.
They retconned Danny Davis into allowing Randy Savage's cheating a year earlier.
But It worked. I think
I just couldn't get past that.
Really?
I just couldn't get past
that. I thought it was good because it was a reason that
he didn't willfully allow Randy Savage. No, because it would have gotten played up by the commentators at the time, and it never did. I just couldn't get past that. That was a bridge too far for me.
I thought it was good luck, good fortune for them. I thought it was a good way. Well, because they needed a partner.
They did.
And it fit perfectly. I disagree with you.
I thought
that was. And so anyway, the pinnacle of the Davis angle is he's the referee for the Bulldogs and the Hearts, and you're right, Dynamite Kid had hurt himself.
Yeah, very badly.
And they needed to take the titles off.
He carried to the ring.
He gets a piggyback ride to the ring. Hart hits him off camera with the megaphone, basically mm-hmm. taking him out of the match. So Davis is the ref for the Bulldogs Hearts. It was on Superstars in mm-hmm. Tampa. And So it's 2-on-1 the whole time, and Davis just allows them to beat Davey Boy up 2-on-1 the whole match, and does a quick cut, you know. And it was after that that Jack Tunney, of course, came out and gave him the famous BAM, life plus 10 years.
Right.
You know, which is one of the – that always made me chuckle, life plus 10 years, just in case. But, you know, to bring Santana back, though, he was wrestling when they did that, actually.
Right.
So when Tunney came out and did that.
Right.
So they kind of brought him back in that way, but I thought it was kind of neat how they did that. It was like everyone on the babyface side had lost their title in a match where he was the ref, and then it's kind of odd, though, from a booking perspective, that the heels went over here. Don't you? Now it's kind of, you know, in today's perspective, when you do something like this, it's like, okay, the titles aren't on the line. This is, you can actually beat the champions here and give the babyfaces their heat back. And they didn't do it. They really put the hearts over.
Here's the thing, though, and this is one of those things you couldn't tell
Davis
at the time.
Gets the pin.
Yeah. You couldn't. Well, they were trying to keep as much heat as they could on him.
Yeah, and this was kind of, it was kind of funny that they did that. And I guess once again,
because he was the one who needed it. The hearts didn't need any more heat. They had the belts.
Yeah, but you know, they really got pushed really hard, and they, it's funny. Bret Hart tells a story that they never had big plans for them when they originally teamed them up, and they just got really, really over on their own merit. The hearts.
Great matches, stole the show an awful lot. Well, here's the thing, though.
But I just think you're right. It's funny because hindsight being 2020, with Davis getting the, he hits Davey Boy at the megaphone and stuff like that. He did a good. This is a fun match, by the way. This is a pretty good match.
Here's another thing, and this is the biggest hindsight is 2020 thing, but it makes sense now. We talk about earlier in the show, JYD, Orton, Morocco moving down the card with the Bulldogs. Even with the back injury, I mean, I think we all had to be thinking they were the best tag team by far in the WWF the last 2 years. It's only a matter of time. They're going to get the belts back. They're going to whatever. I think we all thought that. How do you go from where they were to never getting a sniff again?
Well, they worked against the Hearts after this.
They
on the Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah.
And do you remember? They did some real goofy booking.
Yeah.
They did a 2-out-of-3 falls match. Mm-hmm. It was the Saturday Night's Main Event after the show. And they beat them in two straight falls.
Mm-hmm.
But, and the crowd goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But the one, the, it was really.
What, was one of them a DQ or something?
Yeah, and the Bulldogs, but they pin them the second time. The crowd goes crazy thinking they see the title change.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even acknowledge to the live crowd. Ventura just laughs. He's like, ha ha ha, guess what? They won one of them by DQ, so that means they can't win the titles.
Yeah.
That was like some kind of.
Right.
Smart, but it, I guess.
But they would never be on top again.
No, and you're right. It was just kind of assumed, okay, they got screwed.
Right.
You know, they've got to get it back. But they were getting kind of pushed down the card. Santana, you know, who had been a pretty solid singles guy for now the last couple of years.
It took Strikeforce to give him another breath.
Yeah, because he was doing nothing. He was going nowhere.
That dude would have been El Matador by the summer of 87 had it not been for Strikeforce.
Yeah, had not
that
quit.
Was his trajectory.
Yeah,
so,
and it kept him going a little bit, gave him some new life. But it's funny, with Davis, I think hindsight being 2020 also leads you to think, oh, man, maybe they should have put the baby faces over here because he gets the win here and did nothing. I mean, his run is a.
Well, at a certain point, you have to be taken seriously as a worker, and that just wasn't going to happen with him. He wasn't the biggest guy or anything.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. He's small. I mean, he was a jobber to the star. I mean, he's feuding with Sam Houston by the end of the year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that's what's funny. You couldn't see it with the Bulldogs. You could see it with your own two eyes at the time. Orton, Morocco, JYD, they were on their way down, but the Bulldogs.
Well, this
were
was
also.
This is a good match, by the way. This
it
is
was
more
a
than
a
three
match.
Star. This, I mean, it's funny. Because none, you know, 12 matches again, just like the previous year. So, and they didn't give a lot of matches a lot of time. There were no Broadways in this period during this period. But I would have loved to see this get more time because this is good. It was perfectly done. The ending was just kind of like whoa, like they kind of killed the crowd a little bit. They're like whoa, because no one thought that Davis and the Hearts would win.
Right.
So.
Well, we get to the three matches that had the Uber build, all of whom have been teased at least previously here. One of them in a hair versus hair match at 6:54. Roddy Piper defeated Adrian Adonis with Jimmy Hart. Interesting booking choice here in as much as Piper was on his way out the door. They probably knew that wasn't for good. And then Adrian Adonis again
was also on his way out the door, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing too. And maybe they had a sense of that because
you have to put the way this was booked and the way that era was. I see where you're going. They had to put there was only one way to book this match, and that's to have Piper go.
You know
over
what?
Huge.
I mean, and granted, and this was with much better work rate, but Actually, this was sort of like the Goldberg-Lesnar of 87. They were both on their way out the door, really.
Well, yeah, that and the crowd did shit all over this match. Well, that's okay, true, all right. Yeah, that was another big difference.
I just mean in terms of both, you don't often see a high-profile match where they're both on their way out
the
door.
Well, we've talked about transitional period. Yes, Piper. Right. This was Bill also's Piper's farewell match, which is so laughable to listen to now. But, I mean, whatever. I mean, he's a big enough name. It was cool. And, you know, he had come. We kind of talked about this in our last mini-episode, Ricky. Mm-hmm. Piper took time off after WrestleMania 2. He came back, got the big comeback pop.
Yep.
He finds – I love this angle.
Go ahead.
Can you give me a few minutes to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
He comes back to find that Piper's Pit has been replaced by the Flower Shop, mm-hmm. hosted by Adonis. And Adonis was getting the big push that was really pissing a lot of the fans off, you know. And it all builds. You can actually watch this entire thing unfold on YouTube. Somebody put it together. God bless them. Because I think it was on a Coliseum video. They must have just took it off. YouTube search Piper's Pit versus Flower Shop.
Mm-hmm.
There was unbelievable build to an angle that aired on one of the very first Superstars of Wrestling when they switched it. We've talked about that numerous times when they switched over to syndication in late 86, where they kind of did this dual hosting thing. They really put it over, and, you know, Bob Orton, who was Piper's old bodyguard, is now Adonis' bodyguard. Piper, he's just disgusted, you know. He cuts this great promo. He's like, I don't want my kids watching this guy,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then Morocco's there, and they all do an awesome, like, Adonis was kind of a joke. You know, obviously, he was, you know, grossly overweight.
Mm-hmm.
He got involved with some bigger angle. You know, he teamed with Randy Savage on the house shows in the summer of 86. But largely, he was a joke. And that angle turned him, and I thought, and I'm in the minority. A lot of people hated this run.
Right.
Hated. I thought it was great. Turned him into a big-time player.
He was a heat magnet.
Yeah. They beat him down. Piper, you know, does the big, you know, he comes back, and I don't know if it was a kayfabe injury or if he did legitimately get hurt a little bit. You know, Piper, there was that Saturday Night's Main Event in Cleveland where Piper clobbers him with the crutch.
Right.
And then Adonis takes some time off. And this was really long. I mean, that angle was September.
Right.
This match was March. Unheard of
by
today's standards to have that blow off all the way.
Here's a funny thing. There are limits to what the build was prior to that, because before Piper went away, I saw this on Piper's DVD, mm-hmm. Piper was given a leather jacket in Piper's Pit by guess who?
Adonis.
When he was making the switch to Adorable. So yeah. Piper, pre-WrestleMania 2, was approving of the new Adrian Adonis. So it was there are limits to how far ahead they planned this, because they never explained that.
Well, again, you know, I mean, you know, we'll remember that is true. I remember that. And again, the face heel dichotomy was so strong. You know, heels always supported heels, face always back in that period. And you're right. I don't know if when Piper went away for that summer, if they had that in mind.
They were going to use somebody as a catalyst, but they didn't know when he went away it was going to be Adonis. I'm telling you, they didn't know.
I mean, they did give him the show. You know, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there. I wasn't on the booking.
Well, there were other ways to do it other than the whole thing with the show. But once they gave him Bob Orton, that was probably a giveaway.
Yeah. So I mean, the decision was made well. But again, just the long term planning here was unbelievable. It was
impeccable.
The crowd heat is just molten for this match. I mean, it's got to be seen to be appreciated.
Right.
And you know, we talked about though. Here's the key: two guys on their way out the door. Okay,
right.
Adonis appeared, you know, I mean, this was a mega job. He gets his head shaved.
Right.
You know, beaten cleanly. Mega job. Piper, you know, he leaves. But this whole match gave Brutus Beefcake a rub, and out of this match, to me, that's the big thing about this match.
Right.
Okay, it wraps up a huge feud, but out of it comes this new character, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, which was, you know, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't think you're the biggest Brutus Beefcake fan, but it was a successful gimmick for 2 years.
It was. It was a successful mid-card, upper mid-card.
Yeah, but
well, when we had him on the show one time, we looked up his theme music, and I had Jason play it before he came on.
Well, I'm sure
that was perfect.
Did you give him any Anthrax?
Well, by the way, as long as we're making such jokes here, what this proves is that Piper, for anybody that doubted this, I mean, had Hulk Hogan back in the 80s one night done one too many rails and fell face down in the mirror only to never get up. this proves Roddy Piper could have stepped in and filled his shoes as champion. Maybe not to the same level. I'm not going to say anybody could have been to the same level. I'm telling you, Roddy Piper.
He was the second most over guy on this show because it's interesting too. And this is, I mean, you kind of talk about some of the things you're plugging, you know, an old the leather jacket. Here's something that I noticed. Okay.
He,
other than Hogan, he was the only guy who didn't come down and, you know, in the, one of those motorized rings that everyone loves about this show. Remember,
right?
You know, everyone loves like how they had those little rings. If you haven't seen them, why don't they bring those back? By the way. The motorized
ring. That would be.
You know who's probably behind that tool? Kevin Dunn. He probably thinks they're stupid or something like that. Motorized rings are cool.
It's probably hard. They probably figure it's harder for guys to show individuality when they're just waving at the crowd on the way. I don't know. I guess
you can't have Batista do the gay rodeo dance and stuff. Okay. But no, he was the only guy who didn't, other than Hogan, who didn't come down in the motorized cart.
Right. That's true.
So yeah, this is one of those matches that. You know, if I were to tell you, I'd give this like 3.5 stars.
Right.
Most people would be like, what?
Right.
The angle and the heat carry this beyond the level of work that was involved.
It did.
And Adonis, again, just bumps. Like, Jimmy Hart bumps a lot in this.
Right.
I mean, the ending is really
silly. Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean,
the ending was really silly with, like, Adonis, like, trying to hit him with something and missing and hitting himself in the face. It looked really kind of bad.
For Adonis, and again, a really, really, really good worker. And
he was so fat, by the way.
But he was. But, I mean, that was a guy where no matter how fat he got, he could still work. And that was a
bumped,
thing where...
I mean, between him and Harley Race a couple matches previous, folks.
Right.
I mean, you talk about people who could bump and make a very... A guy with a baby face with limited offense look good.
Right.
I mean, these guys wrote the playbook.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a reason, and you were there that night. There's a reason that the night we had Jesse Ventura on the show, I mixed up political questions with the East-West connection because I'm an Adrian Adonis mark.
You
got to ask questions about a guy like that. We get to now the two matches on the card, the actual main event and what I would call the comic book guy main event, because to all the Snowflakes people, this is the holy grail of late 80s wrestling.
Yes.
Ricky Steamboat with George Steele. There he is again. Defeated Intercontinental Champion Randy Savage with Miss Elizabeth at 14:35. All I will say about this is, for a match that I didn't see at the time and only saw subsequently, after it had been, you know, praised to the utmost.
Oh, Jones.
I didn't think it lived up to the billing. I mean, I thought the two counts were a little formulaic. How many two counts can we cram into this thing? Oh, it had 38 two counts, you know, five of them in 18 seconds. I mean, I don't know. It just – there's a term on both Death Valley Driver and Pro Wrestling Only.
Okay,
on
so it's
boards.
A stupid term then. Okay.
Self-conscious epic. When you're trying too hard to paint the Mona Lisa.
I could not disagree more. I understand the concept.
Yeah.
If you want to see a concept, if you want to see, first of all, this match is unquestionably the greatest WWF match of the 1980s.
It is.
It is not close.
And maybe this is an unfair standard, but could this match even hold the jock of any of the matches in the Steamboat Flair trilogy of 89?
I think it's fairly close.
Really?
Yes,
you'd put
I'm going to tell you why.
Like
I'm going to go into it.
Okay, first of all,
if you want an example of what you talk about, because there is a concept that exists where guys go out there to do an epic and it's just not working. If you want to see an example,
ROH, 2012.
No, to be fair, if you want a very good
Cornette.
If you want a very good example of what
Hope
you're
you'll
talking
still come
about,
on.
A very good example of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels, Mr. Perfect, SummerSlam. 93.
Yes.
That is a this match is nothing short of perfection.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll
have to watch it again.
I have watched this match more times than I've probably watched any match ever. It never gets old. First of all, again, you have to talk about the time period. I came in. The angle that started this feud is what made me, I can identifiably trace to what made me love wrestling forever.
Okay.
I thought. Again, this is when the Intercontinental title meant something. Okay? Okay. Memo to Vince McMahon. Okay? You can actually make that title mean something just on its own. An Intercontinental title match can have a ton of intrigue. Now, granted, good luck finding Randy guys on this level, okay, of Randy Savage or Ricky Steamboat, but...
Well, they're going to have a great Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania this year. The problem is they're calling it the world title, and it's going to have Daniel Bryan and Sheamus.
That's what I kept thinking, too. It's like, that's a different story for a different day.
Yes.
But here you go, okay? Let's talk about the setup here.
Okay.
I'm going to make everyone go out and watch this match right after they listen to this.
Okay.
All right. Randy Savage, we talked about, he beat Santana early in the year. He was unquestionably the number two guy in the company. He is the greatest Intercontinental Champion that ever lived. Okay?
Yep.
This run it was the pinnacle of the Intercontinental title, in my opinion. Okay? Steamboat, around the same time, very over babyface, has a feud with Jake Roberts, wins it, and they set up a match on national TV on Superstars.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestle. Good TV match for those. It's probably been a long time since you've seen it.
I think so, yeah.
But very good TV match for Superstars of Wrestling in 1986.
Right.
Okay, very good TV match.
Right.
A lot of near falls. People really wanted the title. You know, Savage was very hated. Steamboat very beloved. People wanted the title switch. Obviously, then comes the famous angle where Savage sort of, you know, realizing that he's in a lot of trouble, drapes Steamboat's neck over the rail, comes down hard. Steamboat goes into the all-time oversell mode. You know, Vince McMahon.
An oversell that would make Shawn Michaels' SummerSlam 05 blush.
Yes. Vince McMahon, who is rightly maligned a lot of times as a commentator, was the perfect guy to do this. My God, Steamboat can't breathe. He can't breathe. You know, that's like... And
please
then,
tell me that there was a prototype, by God, King, in
no,
there.
No, there was not. Oh, that's the only thing. Jim Ross, I would have loved to hear
oh,
that.
Oh, God. Yeah. Jim Ross. You would have been ready to call the National Guard after hearing his call.
And did you remember that episode? Bruno Sammartino flipped out on... Because Savage cuts the...
He went apeshite in the back.
Yeah, they treat it like Steamboat's pretty much dead. They stretcher him off.
Right.
The crowd's freaking out. And then Sammartino's giving you updates in the base in the trainer's room. Savage comes out with this ketchup. And he's like, where's the hot dog at? I got my ketchup and my mustard. Where's the hot dog at? And Sammartino freaks out and just chokes him up against the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, this got over huge. And then obviously they talk about something that would never get over today. Those Ricky Steamboat vignettes where he was learning to talk again. Those were bad. Okay, that was kind of the low part. No one remembers that, though. But he comes back. He shows up. The crowd is so molten for this match. They had some really good house show matches. There's one in Detroit about a month. The crowd was just could. I mean, this to me is the most anticipated Intercontinental title match ever.
Yeah, okay? The matches around the horn before and after Mania were unbelievable.
They didn't have any really after.
I thought they had a couple loops after, didn't they?
Just a couple.
Maybe I'm thinking of the ones that were before.
Oh, yeah, were real good. But this, and it's funny if you watch.
Because there were several loops all in all.
And if you watch them, they individually, a lot of the spots you saw in the WrestleMania match were done. You know, the big backdrop spot in this match. That Steamboat beat Savage in Ontario on a count out when he just does that. There's no mats. Savage hits the floor and gets counted out.
Okay.
For one, and there's a lot here. But it's so interesting behind the scenes, the story. Steamboat talks about this in great detail, that they kind of got together months in advance, meaning him and Savage, and decided, hey, this is probably going to be the biggest stage we're ever on in our careers. We're going to steal the show.
And Savage was notorious for note by note by note by note by note.
Very famous story. They listed everything out before one lockup they had. It was that detailed. I could not disagree with the criticism of this match anymore.
Okay.
I'll have to watch it again. This is and the reaction of the crowd when Steamboat is announced, it sends chills down my spine. To me, this is still to this day. You talk about where does it fit in with people. I have this as number two WrestleMania match ever.
Okay. I remember from the list of lists.
Yeah, and you know, that was obviously done, about 06. So 6 years ago now.
Yeah.
I had it number two then. I got it number two now.
Okay.
That's probably higher than a lot of people have it.
Okay.
But this to me is unquestionably it's the best wrestling match of the time period. That's what makes WrestleMania 3 so. Not only does it have the most famous match of the time period, the best wrestling match, same
part. Right.
Okay. They did steal the show, and whether or not you know Steamboat talks about this, that you know after the show everyone was coming up to him and Savage and not Hogan, that pissed Hogan off to no end. Which if that's true, I absolutely love it. Okay. Whether that's true or not, who knows? But the bottom line is, man, I love the way that this match is not a Broadway, because today they would have given him a lot more time, obviously.
Right.
the two count thing was huge because they worked at such a fast pace. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that, I don't know, for me, I just remember there's a moment where Jesse Ventura, who never was a shill mm-hmm. as an announcer, just goes to Gorilla Monsoon and goes, I think this is the greatest match I've ever seen in my life. And it's just like, yeah, man, like I mean, I probably watched this match 100 times. I could put it on right now. I'd be dialed into the max.
Okay. All right, yeah.
Meltzer only gives it 4.5 stars, which I think is one of his worst ratings ever. This, to me, definition of a 5-star match.
I'll have to take another look at it. By the way, there
you talk about Steamboat Flair, by the way. I was kind of processing in my head. The only – it's probably not better than any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of close to the Chi-Town Rumble, though.
Okay. That one I think I only saw bits and pieces of, but I was mesmerized by the Cajun one, the one at the Clash. The thing also, too, here in looking at this, they had at least one loop around. I know because there wasn't much daylight between when Steamboat won and he dropped it to Honky Tonk Man that summer. That was pretty quick. But there was at least two. I remember
family reasons, by the way. His wife had become pregnant. He asked time off, Vince McMahon being the tremendous soul he is.
Right.
Even though in that time period, though, it seems really heartless, and on the Steamboat DVD, it's played up as he's very bitter about it.
Right. You're not going to get time off as a champion.
Yeah, you're not. And
unrealistic.
It's kind of funny because it was so awesome that he won, but it was one of those things that's like, okay, now he won, he beat, he avenged the loss.
Right.
And it's interesting that a lot of the heat was on Savage, because Savage pretty much turns, he stays heel, but he was cheered during this match, parts of the match. And he'd been cheered, you know.
Look at Flair in 89. Flair in 89, it was the same thing. He turned babyface right afterwards. Steamboat was much better at the chase than he was at maintaining on top.
That's a great point, what you made. I don't know what he would have done, because whatever program he would have done next as the champion would just not have measured up to the Savage. So it almost, as crazy as it is, him losing the title, and it was shot. I remember as a kid, just stunned that he lost to the Honky Tonk. You know, it's like one of those, like you're an 8-year-old kid, Mark. What? No, you know, like please let him beat him next. Get the belt back next week.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
It was really shocking, but in retrospect, I think it kind of worked. It's okay.
No, it did. That
was a great point you made. He's better at the chase than maintaining.
Yeah, and that's the problem is, a guy like him has to win the blow-off match, but it's just like, you better know what you're doing after that in a hurry because it's not going to maintain. He's not going to be your guy to build around.
And
you know,
they didn't know what they were, because it was funny, they did this angle in the Saturday Night's Main Event after this where he beats Hercules. Again,
right.
The little Steamboat Hercules match again. And Savage comes out and he attacks. The crowd really kind of like wanted them to put their differences aside.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seemed, and he attacks him anyway. But they didn't do a lot, because Steamboat kind of bitches about it a little bit on his DVD, that they didn't really do a lot after. They wrestled all over the place leading up to WrestleMania.
There was like one more loop, because I remember from like May,
a
Matt Brock column in PWI about
a cage match. Okay.
Yes, it was a cage match. Yeah. I grew up on the aftermath.
Yeah.
About a cage match, I think, at Nassau Coliseum.
I think there's a match in Detroit or something like that.
Because they were cage matches after Mania. That was the way of like, how can you top this? You can't top this as a standard match. So we'll bring it to the cage.
Yeah,
that was the ultimate proving ground.
And this match, obviously, also, let's bring this up, very influential. A lot of the smaller guys, you know, guys that are going to be having a big match, your CM Punk's, like this match.
Right.
Because these were two guys. I mean, obviously, again, they were obviously much bigger than the average man, but they were not known as big guys.
And it came
this
out of nowhere.
This was not Billy Jack Haynes Hercules.
This was the least work rate oriented territory / big promotion of its time.
And that helps the mythology of this match, I'll say, because, like I said, I don't think, this stupid Death Valley, your boys, that stupid message board didn't have this as the number one match.
I'm just a lurker. I'm not a poster.
Okay. As the match, they had this as the number two match of the 80s, which is stupid. Okay, it's dumb. It's wrong.
What, they have it behind one of the Steamboat Flares?
No, for WWF. No, Slaughter Sheik.
Oh, the boot camp match is
which is
idolized on there.
Yeah. Now, I would put that very. I mean, that's probably to me. That's now. It's funny to me to rip a pick that would probably be my obvious number two.
Mm-hmm.
But come on,
but so far behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, this was the only five star. To get real nerdy on you here,
okay.
This is the only 5-star match of the 1980s WWF.
Well, that was the work rate main event, the actual main event on the show, and you and I talked about this a little bit here. And this is one of the ways where the FDH Lounge differs from Vince McMahon and from those who edit out history and everything like that. I'll invoke a little bit of history. We're very open about that on the show. We'll talk about anything. When you were on SNS back in 2006, you had a debate with a gentleman that was a previous broadcast distributor for both of us, Paul Belfie at the Sports Talk Network, and you had a very vigorous debate with him. And it was one of those things where, and again, I'm a smart mark. I always said at the time, and I think he never much liked it, I said, I'm a Sunday night sympathizer, you know, but it was, you know, back in the whole war between the shows, and that's where my tastes lie then and lie now. But I was like, God, as much as it pains me, I kind of agree with Paul as far as, like, if you're going to apply the criteria you applied for the list of lists, because
I think that was just taken out of context.
Work rate oriented big match ever. I mean, I can't think of another big match that had worse work rate, but it
didn't matter.
It was 15 on a scale of 1 to 10 in every other criteria that you were applying.
I'll have to go back and listen to how I set that up, because at the end of the day, any of those lists were basically just my opinions anyway.
Sure, sure. But, you start with, though, if you're going 1 to 10, you start with a baseline of 30 before you even get to work rate.
Yeah, but...
That was just
me,
my
though,
thing.
For me, I call this shows you how much I love the set.
Mm-hmm.
I, after watching Savage Steamboat, when I put that show on, a lot of times I'll turn the show off.
I don't blame you, yeah.
Because, you know, you get Jake Honky, you get the popcorn match.
You know what? You know what's coming.
Yeah, and look, I'm not sure. This is the most famous match in the history of the industry.
Sure.
Okay, undoubtedly. Drew, you know, I mean, if you were to ask again, you know, using Paul's old method that he always liked to say, is if you found somebody on the street and asked them to name a wrestling match that ever happened, you know, chances are if it's not a wrestling, he's going to name this one probably.
Well, and if nothing that I ever say the rest of my life proves that I can be impartial in these things, then citing and agreeing with Paul on this over you will prove that. But he's right if he says that Hogan Andre drew that gate.
Oh, it absolutely
did. I agree with him on that.
But it doesn't mean I have to like it that much.
I mean,
look.
If you just said it was one of your 25 matches, I would totally agree with you.
Look. In my defense, there's really no objective way to do
sure.
It. You know, there's no Bill James does not have a statistical model for professional wrestling.
No, I know, but it's an interesting prism to look at this. It's a very controversial match what it was.
It's very hipster of me to say, yeah, that's not one of the best 25 matches in WrestleMania history.
I don't think it's hipster of you. I you know what the hipster point of view is? The hipster point of view would be, you know, if you watch it again, there was some subtle selling of body parts. There was some subtle psychology to
look,
it. That's the hipster point
to
of
me,
view. You just don't see how great the psychology was.
To me, this match is, look, it's all about the build-up. And look, I put over the build-up like none other. I thought the build was incredible for this.
Okay.
But it's the build-up, them staring at each other.
Body slam,
the body,
drop.
And then you wait for the body slam.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, look, the heat was incredible. It was, like I said, it was, you know, it
molten
was Hogan
heat.
It's Hogan's. It cemented Hogan as the greatest of all time, okay, at that time.
The
when
pinnacle
it happened.
Of
yeah.
The era.
Yeah, I mean, after that match, it's kind of like, okay, Hulk Hogan is the man. All right, there's never been anyone who's done this better than Hulk Hogan. Not from an in-ring, but I'm talking about is a star, okay?
You know what's funny is that when we were talking about that, about 17 really marked definitively the end of an era. WrestleMania 3, now you were talking about a little bit of a slide after that. It was a very long, slow, barely perceptible slide to the end of the era because it took another 3-4 years, however long it took. But here's the interesting thing. When did it heat again from there? The next February, when Hogan Andre, the rematch, was the biggest drawing match in the history of U.S. television.
Yes.
A match that will never, a record that will never be broken.
Yeah, because it was
the main event
on
NBC.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that match again, however momentarily, brought wrestling to the heights that it tasted in 87 and early.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, it was a slow. The reason that there was a decline following this,
yeah,
a gradual, is because there has to be a peak. Okay,
right.
in any when you're analyzing any sort of period of anything,
right,
there has to be a peak.
Right.
So yes, by definition, there had to be a decline, but it was not as substantial and severe as what happened in the wake of the Austin heel turn.
Right.
14 years later.
Right.
But look, I mean, there's not a lot you can really say. I mean. Say about this match, to be honest. And I'm not trying to be like an asshole about it or
no,
anything.
I
pardon
understand.
My French. It's just like, if you talk to anyone, it's like, yep, real famous, yep, huge, yep,
right.
You gotta watch it. But, I mean, I'm not alone. I mean, and look, the thing with me is, there are people way more critical about this match than I am.
Right.
I would still give it, from a star rating perspective, I have it. The work rate non-existent, the
atmospherics alone have to provide a floor of what? One and a half, at least?
I would say that's five. The atmosphere would get five, but the work rate brings it. So I have it. Give it two and
so
a half.
So what? Two and a half. 2.5 is fair.
Dave Meltzer gives it negative stars. Okay, that's silly.
I disagree with
that's
Dave
silly.
On that.
That's really silly. You know what I'm saying? And he's like, the obviously, wrestling journalist. I've always said is a bit of an oxymoron, but he's the peak. But that, I mean,
yeah.
And I was being criticized. Let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
Knobs. Okay, that's all I gotta say. Knobs. All right, 6 years later, knobs. Okay,
yeah.
Like to me, it's like, all right, maybe I was what I said was taking. Like I tried to be objective about. It. I was just trying to. That's the hype machine. Okay.
Okay.
I was trying to be a hype machine. At the end of the day, if you ever go back and listen to Listless, it's just my day.
Well, you never said, in all fairness. You never said each of these evenly applied, evenly whatever.
No.
Now, Paul seized on that as though that were the case.
Yeah,
if Paul's framing were correct, I would have to agree with him. But that was just Paul's interpretation of what
you
said.
Yeah, look, I said, I factor these things in. But at the
sure.
end of the day, you're always factoring that when you watch a match.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's like, people will come up for just like a song or a movie. People come up with justifications why song A is better than song B, album A is better.
Right.
At the end of the day, man,
right.
It comes down to your ears and eyes.
Right.
Okay, that's all that matters.
Right.
There's no objective way.
And the interesting thing is that, as we wrap up three, when you look at the slide that came after this, now granted, and again, not dramatic in terms of business. They did a good business.
No, I was going to say,
they survived.
We're going to talk about this because
yeah.
WrestleMania 5 did their best business ever.
Right.
The Hogan Savage feud,
right.
Which was kind of what they had.
Yeah,
next,
that's true. That really lit it up again.
It really didn't. I mean, from I think fans like us, when I say fans like us, people who kind of wanted more, we like the in-ring stuff,
right.
Maybe we've watched too much for our own good or whatever like that. 87 and 88 in general were not very creatively. Were not.
And they survived that, yeah.
But it didn't matter. I mean, the Hogan Savage formation and breakup was all that mattered.
Right.
At the end of the day, that's what people don't understand. They do. This is especially true today, and they didn't do it back then. They try to do too much with the mid card.
Right.
At the end of the day, it just boils down to that top match. Just and this whole show, the whole legacy is
right.
Okay. Look at this. Okay, Billy Jack Kane's Hercules, one angle, set that match up. JYD Race, one angle, set that up. Savage Steamboat is a little more, and Piper Down, it's a little more long-term,
mm-hmm.
but keep in mind, those were like six-month storylines.
Right.
But still, very subtle things. Hogan Andre.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. 3 years, a long time. I mean, it was just basically, just a couple promos.
Well, and when you look at that, and we talked about that the first two shows didn't really have big blow-offs. This one did. I mean, they reinflated the Hogan Andre balloon subsequently, but this qualifies as a blow-off.
Yeah, and they did do because we should.
That
point
was a little
out.
Bit of retcon, by the way. Oh, he got his shoulder up. Really? How come at the time nobody really talked about that?
No, they did. They did on this. They did right away.
Did they?
Yeah, because that. I think that was the back then, Ricky. Mm-hmm. They had this stuff mapped out months and in some cases a year in advance. I don't know if the NBC deal was up, but they. There was an interview, a sit-down interview with Andre. Granted, Andre did leave,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. He was
That's
off.
What I'm saying. He was gone.
Yeah, but he did some TV stuff, and they played it up. That, his shoulder, he pinned him. Because for those who, first mm-hmm. of all, there can't be anyone who's listening to this who's never seen this match. But
right.
in case you forget, there's a spot early in the match. Hogan tries to body slam, fails him. Andre falls on him. And, yeah, it's kind of silly because
right.
his shoulder very clearly was up and whatever. But, Andre tries to claim it was a three, and they played that up for the rematch.
But in the immediate aftermath, this qualified as a blow-off. The Piper win was a blow-off. The Steamboat win was a blow-off. I don't want to get too either A, intellectual, or B, Freudian about this, but almost like a post-coital kind of a thing. It just seems like
When
you
like
that kind of peak, maybe things are going to be quieter for a while.
You have to.
Maybe it's just, you know, the WWF equivalent of cuddle time, you know? I mean, where are you going to go from that moment?
Yeah, like I said, yes, there was a decline, but this was a celebration. This was, this to me, this is how a wrestling show should be done. Huge main events.
Right.
Big names.
Right.
Unbelievable match underneath, in-ring match underneath.
Right.
Lots of angles with blow-up builds.
Right.
Big names. This is the this is the best WrestleMania of all time.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. If people say 17, I'll listen to it, but I have my reasons why I don't. I disagree. It is the only WrestleMania of the first seven we'll talk about that is not in the bottom 10. Okay. The early WrestleManias, and we're going to really go into this as a little tease for the next mini episode. We're going to talk, because I think a lot of people our age, again, not to make it look we're old timers, Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
When they think WrestleMania, these are the shows they think of. They don't think about WrestleMania 21. They don't think about Batista chasing Triple H. And granted, that just, I mean, wrestling fans can be tend to be a little young, whatever. But this, to me, most famous show ever, best WrestleMania ever. You know, and that's from someone who, you know, you wouldn't think that from. I mean, this is, you know, not my favorite era of WWF, but
yeah.
I mean, but to me, I just remember being a kid. This was my first big time show as a wrestling fan that I was looking forward to, and it lives up to the hype.
And one match aside, not a ton of snowflakes, so it's very impressive that you're putting this card.
Yeah, but there's, I mean, some. I mean, you know, like the six man. That's over a 3-star match. Piper Donis, I would say.
Yeah,
too,
but compared to today.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
compared to today, yeah, the wrestling is
today. It's a disappointment in WrestleMania if you don't get probably at least 4 3-star matches today.
Yeah. Well, again, though, it was just the way it was booked. Time constraints.
Right.
And, you know, that's
maybe too many matches.
Yeah, well, that's another factor we're going to get to.
We'll get that in the next couple ones. Yes. Yep. All right, well, WrestleMania 3, best ever. Leave it on that note, I guess.